All right, welcome to the Real Short Box. My name is Jarrett.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Donald.
And today's show is going to be our favorite, maybe your favorite, 90s stories of comic books, Marvel, DC, whatever you choose. The 90s were a fun time, a wild time, a ridiculous time. And
Very much so.
And I think we all got some cool choices. Kevin is going to start us off. Kevin, what did you bring today?
Well, this is a nice classic story from about 25 years ago.
25 years ago?
1992.
How old are you?
I guess I'm getting up there. I am doing the first Carnage storyline. It was three issues. Amazing Spider-Man 361 through 363.
Mm-hmm.
From Mark Bagley and David Michelin, or Micheline. And let me tell you something, fellas.
Michelin tires?
Yeah, something like that.
Michelente.
You know, I reread these three books, let me tell you.
You reread these just before the podcast?
About a day or so before.
Wow, that's dedication right there.
That's dedication.
Research.
I mean, it's been 25 years, fellas. I remember buying these books from the,
oh my God, you're so old.
From the Wizard Comic Shop in New York, where I grew up. And
Don and I are only 12, by the way. We're just a couple of 12-year-olds.
Right, very young.
Very young.
This guy
young.
Took us to his house, and Kevin's now
kidnapped you. All that
we're in a basement.
In the basement. Talking comic books.
If you can help us, please.
Tell us about Carnage.
SOS. It's an SOS.
Then I get to call my mom.
But fellas, let me tell you something. This was like a fun read. I mean, not only did I, you know, always love looking at the old advertisements in these old comics from back in the day. It takes you back. It's all new Super Nintendo advertisements. But
Game
just,
Genie.
Game Genie.
Oh my God.
All that stuff. But the story itself was awesome. Basically, from the very beginning, you see Carnage just doing his work. He's just killing people left and right. There's a news report that gets put out there.
It starts out with that?
Pretty much.
This is the introduction of Carnage?
Yeah.
Like this is the first appearance?
Yeah, I'll show you.
He immediately is killing people in the first issue.
Well, he's... Let's go back. He's about to start a rampage.
Cletus Cassidy already has the symbiote attached to him, essentially.
I've got the book in my hand here.
Yeah, you'll see at the very beginning.
That's right. He's just out.
You see him. So he's already there. Savage Genesis. He's already going at it.
What was the issue then where he gets the little bit of the symbiote? I remember there was
that
issue.
I believe it's issue 347, I recall. If I recall, that's where, you know, where Eddie Brock breaks out of the jail.
The symbiote breaks him out.
The symbiote breaks out, but like a piece of it kind of like spawned off and left there. And then Cassidy, of course,
Okay. That's the one I'm thinking of. So that's not in this issue.
Not in this
that's
one.
In the prior issue.
That's more like, it was more like, I guess, a cameo appearance. But this is like the first full in his glory, Carnage.
Let me ask you, is this a first print?
Yes, sir, it is.
It's silver, though, the cover.
No, that's not a first print.
I don't think it is. Yeah.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure it's the second print.
Oh, well, my bad, then.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, it's still a good copy. It's in great shape. But yeah, I think the first print was white on the cover, right?
Yeah.
It's like it had the white and stuff.
And I know because when I got rid of my comics first time, one of the few I kept was the three-part Carnage story.
It says right here.
I probably have the first
second printing. Print in the U.S.
It's probably my other box.
Look, we're not judging you.
Right.
I probably have another box.
I mean, you know, we have the first print.
It's in my other box. So you're just... I had to pull something out.
You're just second print Kevin.
That's funny, though. I totally thought it was the origin in that first story.
Me too.
Yeah, but... Yeah, no, it was that earlier one, and then it just boom, he's Carnage.
And here, boom, he's Carnage. He's going to work.
But Cletus Cassidy was a serial killer before he even joined the symbiote.
Oh, yeah, he was a bad, bad fella.
I like the silver cover better.
And
just throwing that out there.
Basically, Spider-Man, or Peter Parker, he's watching the news, and he sees a story. And basically, before this happens, there's a student at the college that Peter attends gets killed. It's a friend of his. He finds out about it watching the news, and he freaks out, and he's hearing on his way there... these reports about, you know, a person with skin that, you know, that comes out and living skin that comes out and attacks people. And so he's thinking it's Venom. He's like, oh my God. And then you go back and he talks about how he abandoned Venom or Eddie Brock on this Caribbean island. So he's thinking, basically,
I remember that. That was a really good story.
Yeah, they're there. And he basically made Eddie believe that he killed him. He tricked him.
He put his skull with the Spider-Man costume on.
Yeah, the skull of the Spider-Man costume.
That was one of the first Venom stories I ever read.
Yes.
That's when I fell in love with Venom.
Freed from their driving hatred, Eddie and the alien were content to remain on the island, finding peace at last.
Yes.
Because he was like, I did it.
He did it.
I got my revenge.
So he's cool. He's happy.
Right. Yeah.
So now he's freaking out. He's thinking, oh my God, Eddie's back in town. Oh no. So he thinks it's, you know, he thinks it's him.
Oh my God, look at this.
What are you showing me now?
So you're right. He's looking up, he's looking up Eddie's cellmate now.
Yeah, he's investigating him. Yep.
But look who that looks like.
Oh, the Joker. I know the
that
Joker.
Couldn't completely be like the Joker.
More Joker-esque.
Yeah. Especially with the way his face is.
His hands are cuffed and he's got that wild hair.
It's like a sepia tone.
Well, the funny thing is, Cletus Cassidy's face, it has a very Joker-ish type smile anyway to it. Uh-huh. And no doubt he was patterned off the Joker. There's no question about it. For someone who's just,
what if the Joker got a symbiote? Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much what he is.
Right.
And the way he talks, actually, he talks like the Joker. It's just like, you know, chaos. The laws is just there just to control us.
Although, this is a Southern joke.
I know you are a fan of the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Oh, yes.
Do you remember when they introduced Carnage? It was like in one of the later seasons.
Oh, yeah.
And they had him like a Dennis Hopper type. He was like, look out, man.
Yeah, yeah.
He was
like,
I got my symbiote, man, and I'm crazy, man.
Well, he's kind of like that in the comics, too. You know,
Yeah.
He's a little bit like that, too. So it was a good tone of the character. But anyway, getting back to this, you know, he's freaking out. He's thinking, oh, my God, Venom's back. And then he goes to this school when he's investigating Cletus Cassidy. He goes to this boys' school where he grew up.
Where Cletus grew up.
Yeah, it's all like a dilapidated.
Yeah, dilapidated place. I mean, basically, he blew it up, you know. Crazy guy.
And he's sitting there naked
with a teddy bear.
He found his old teddy bear from childhood. He's like, you know, oh, my friend.
It's Binky, by the way.
Yeah, Binky. He's talking to it, you know.
He's just, how
like
you the only, Binky
like the only friend
me?
I ever had. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, of course, he detects Spider-Man there. And then, of course, it's on. Carnage, hey, baby, you know, it's me, Carnage.
Nice. Yeah.
I own this issue, but I'm going to be honest. I never opened it up. Mm. I never looked. I just bought it last year, like the first the first appearance of Carnage. I thought it would be important to have. For some reason, I like first appearances probably almost as much as Jarrett, but I guess you're not into it anymore. So that's cool. I'll just take all yours.
I like third appearances.
I got that actually of Doctor Strange.
Right, the third?
But it's the origin.
Oh, well,
so I thought that was cool.
And I'm sure it's still up there.
Yeah, maybe.
But in Spider-Man's first confrontation, it doesn't go too well as you. Like I can imagine he nearly gets killed. You see a part there where he forms like an axe and he like throws it right at Spider-Man. And Spider-Man like, you know, dodges just in time. And he realizes this guy Carnage is no joke.
So when Carnage throws stuff like that, like an axe, does that's part of his skin, so to speak. Does that come back to him eventually?
No.
Or it's just gone?
No.
Just gone.
Just gone.
As a matter of fact, you see right there.
Yeah, you see it kind of like, you know, disintegrate after a while.
Oh, okay.
Almost like Spider-Man's webbing in a way, it'll eventually wear off.
Yeah.
But, so Spider-Man realizes, oh my God, I'm in trouble. I can't beat this guy. And he talks to Mary Jane. He's like, look, you know what? I don't want to do this. I got to get Eddie Brock back here. I need his help. I can't beat this guy.
I have to go back to, now I'm remembering this. I have to go back to the island.
Yeah, let's go back to island and confront him.
I have
him.
To set Venom loose.
Yeah, so that's the end of the first
awesome.
Issue.
And Venom was the first guy that, like, Spider-Man was legitimately
scared of him. Much like how Wolverine had a slight fear of Cyber.
Right.
You know, because he was like, oh, it's that old adamantium skin, you know, just for a side note on that. But that was the first issue. And then the second issue in this particular series.
I'm excited.
This is where they go to the Caribbean island.
Yeah. Do you have it? You have the issue?
Yeah, of course.
Cool.
And what happens is, Spider-Man's not stupid. He brings Johnny Storm with him. He brings the Human Torch with him along.
Right.
Because fire, along with sonic sound.
They had that sonic gun.
Back in effect, Venom, you know, in the symbiote. So they go there, and of course, Eddie's like freaking out, like, wait, oh my God, he's dead.
This issue's in pristine condition,
by the way, I must say. Not bad for 25 years,
you
huh?
You took great care of this.
Yes, I did. My friend's uncle taught me how to do that. Taught me how to take care of books, make sure you have them all with the backboards and plastics.
Good to have an influence from an elder to teach you how to take care
of
your comics.
And interesting enough, this elder was about our current age now, so it was kind of cool having someone.
That's how I had a lot of my comic stuff was like older, like brother friends, family friends.
Breaking
it
down to you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool you like your comics, but make sure you take care of them.
I didn't have that. I had two older sisters that didn't give a shit.
Yeah. As I said,
I had to learn. Yeah,
but yeah, not bad for 25 years.
No,
but it's cool when they get to the island. As you can see, as you're going through the book, Don, and for, you know, let the audience know at home, you see that things don't go too well when they first confront Eddie. Eddie freaks out. He's like,
"Oh my god,
yeah, you're in my piece. You're dead. No, you can't be alive. Okay, now we're just gonna finish the job." So he's coming at him.
He's smart too in this one. Venom uses his suit to basically blast the Human Torch with sand.
Yep, and kind of
smother
out.
His flames, and yep. then uses his suit again to push him down into the water.
He's smart. Yep.
Yeah.
See, nice. This is a man who has full command of the symbiotic powers.
And right. this is still Michelin, right?
Yeah, still Michelin.
Yeah, good writer, by the way. Wrote a lot of Superman comics, too, which I very much enjoyed back in the day.
And appreciate it, since you're more of a DC man. That's no doubt about mm-hmm. it. But they get there, and Spider-Man's trying. Peter's like, look, can we just talk for a moment? You know, obviously Venom isn't listening at first.
Right.
And basically, they have to finally use another sonic gun from the Fantastic Car to mm-hmm. put him down. And then finally, he's like, look, can you just listen to me? Can we just talk? And he's like, all right, what you got to say? Look, you're... part of your symbiote broke off, and it got to Cletus Kasady. And he's like, oh, you know, that guy's a sociopath. Like, yeah, he's killing people. It's, oh.
Innocence. Yeah, innocence.
Yeah. And now this is the part of the interesting moral fiber that Eddie has. He had this weird twist of...
This was the crossover into the anti-hero.
Yeah, the anti-hero. Mm-hmm. Where he doesn't like innocent people being killed. Like, he just kills...
Unless it's Peter Parker. Well, I guess he's not innocent to him.
Yeah, Peter Parker are just people who deserve, quote-unquote, to die.
Yeah.
So when he hears this, like, okay, I'll go with you, but, you know, you must promise me that when this is over, you let me go. You must free me. You can't mm-hmm. let me go back to jail, whatever the case may be. So, like, all right, no problem. So, of course... Cletus is doing his thing, killing more people. They finally confront him. And at first, Carnage makes a deal with Venom. He's like, hey, why don't we team up together and kill Spider-Man, tear him apart?
Wasn't he also like, hey, dad? It's almost like you're my dad.
Yeah, right? When he meets him, he's like, hey, dad, in a joking way. Because basically the symbiote talking to the other, the older symbiote.
Well, dad.
Yeah, well, dad. And so he says, you know what? No, I'm not doing that. I'm putting you down. So Spider-Man and Venom attack him. And then they both find out that even with Venom, it still doesn't matter. Carnage is stronger than both of them combined.
How did they justify that? I don't know if they... Was it just because it was being run by a complete psychopath?
Yes,
was
it like... yes. That's based out of it. They just kind of said like his crazy mental makeup makes the symbiote stronger. It's just
because it showed him holding a helicopter. Yeah. So he was super strong.
Yeah.
I always thought it was cool. Yeah, he made like knives.
And in fact, as you can see that panel right there, he knocks both of them
down. And then he grabs a little baby.
Oh, yeah, this part is evil. Carnage is so insane and so just immoral. He actually tosses an infant child out a window.
And they have the voice bubble of the baby going, what?
Yeah, yeah. So Spider-Man and Venom, you know, they're freaking out like, oh my God, you know, we got to save the baby. So they both save the baby. And Venom, you see him playing with a little baby too, you know.
Evil Venom holding a baby.
The baby likes him too. Baby likes him. So now, you know, Venom understands, okay, this is some serious business right here. We got to do something. You know, we can't have this kind of destruction happen. So basically, the one problem that they discover was that Venom, just much like how Spider-Man can't detect if Venom's around, Venom has the same problem. He can't detect if Carnage is around.
Right.
So they're talking about, oh, what do we do? So they would listen to things that Cletus would say, and then try to figure out, okay, where he's going to go next. So he mentioned something about, you know, I need an audience, I need to go after... By the way, he hates the press, he hates the media.
Because they made him look like a psychopath.
Right. Guess where he goes?
I'm guessing there's a cigar involved.
Yes, he goes to kidnap J. Jonah Jameson. Yeah. And that leads us to the final issue of this series, where J. Jonah Jameson gets kidnapped. And the funny thing is, you know how J. Jonah Jameson is. He gets confronted, and he threatens him with his life. He's like, look, you can't kill me. I'm too important to die. I'm too important.
Right on the front page.
Right on the front page. I'm too important to die. I can't die. So he takes J. Jonah Jameson to a heavy metal concert. He's very much in heavy metal.
I remember that. He was in the metal.
He takes him to Madison Square Garden.
Wait, who was in the metal? Carnage?
Carnage.
Cletus Kasady. That's so weird. He loves heavy metal
music.
You would
think he'd be into, like, banjo shit.
But he takes J. Jonah Jameson to a Madison Square Garden for a concert.
Headbanger heaven.
Yeah, headbanger heaven. And here's the funniest thing. When he gets to the concert, he gets on the microphone. He starts talking to the crowd. Hey, you know, chaos, blah, blah, blah.
I kill people.
Are you down with me? Blah, blah. So there's one guy in the crowd, when he's giving a speech about, hey, guys, let's kill, let's do this and that. One guy actually says, yeah, he's right. This random dude takes a knife out and is about to stab somebody. Until Venom and Spider-Man, you know, intervene.
Wow.
I mean, look at this. Look what he says. I've seen the light. Now let's see the blood, you know? It's just crazy.
Well, yeah. Cletus knows his audience.
Yeah, Cletus knows his audience. So, of course, J. Jonah Jameson, he gets free at first. But being an idiot, he's trying to make a phone call to report the story in. And then he gets recaptured.
No, what a moron.
Yeah, what a moron. And then there's another confrontation, of course, and basically what happens in the end to stop Cassidy, to stop Carnage, to basically get the symbiote off of him, they go to the sound speakers inside the...
It always ended with sonic waves.
Yeah,
always.
The sonic waves. You know, so basically, you know, Peter just cranks it up. And while he's cranking it up, he's affecting Venom, Eddie Brock as well. So Eddie says, it's okay. Just keep going. We have an older, you know, symbiote. We can handle it. Just keep going. Just get that thing off of him. So it happens. And once Cletus is done, once Carnage has finally been defeated, you know, Venom, Eddie's little beef kind of recontinues. He grabs Peter. Like, And then just in time, Mr. Fantastic comes in with his sonic gun and
zaps him again.
And then he's put in a container unit, and that's pretty much it. And of course, Spider-Man and J. Jonah have a little brief confrontation about responsibility and whatnot. And then the issue ends with something that you would be familiar with, Jarrett. Who are those two people you see there?
Oh, those are his parents, Peter Parker's parents, who were supposed to be like spies or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, forget. I definitely read more of that story because I remember the Shocker part.
Mm-hmm.
But if I remember, that it wasn't really their parents. I think the Chameleon was behind. I don't know. It was a whole
Chameleon's the best.
Yeah, Chameleon's great.
But basically,
I said they should do a movie with him and Mysterio.
Mysterio, yeah, that'd be cool.
The perfect two.
That is a good
movie.
Illusions and disguise.
Yeah. Yep,
but
espionage type. Yeah. Spider-Man.
That's true. I hear you. But in conclusion, this was a great three-issue run.
Sounds like it.
I mean, Bagley and Micheline, they hit it out of the park. Basically, they basically introduced this new villain into the Marvel Universe, into the Spider-Man rogue gallery of villains. And as you know, the following year, they would do another series, a crossover series called Maximum Carnage.
Right, that's right, which everybody was in. Everybody. Well, they also, what I got to give them props for is they definitely were trying to, because Venom was, he was so hot at that time, so like...
Mm-hmm. Oh, was he?
Yeah, no, he was, I mean, look how beefy and brawn, I mean, that guy is just Eddie Brock.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on.
All those trading cards are worth money,
Brock
too.
Brock rhymes with... On it.
Let's just say it rhymes with cock.
No, the Venom trading cards were worth money back then.
Everything Venom.
Everything
but
Venom.
The fact is, they actually made an original character. It wasn't like just like, which they did do later on. They kind of went a little symbiote crazy and like everybody had symbiote. It was just a little nuts.
Yes.
But Carnage was an original character with staying power and is still around. Donald, what do you got from us across the pond into another comic book company?
Into another dimension. I have Emerald Twilight.
Oh, well, another classic.
The Green Lantern Corps. Mm,
another classic storyline from the 90s.
This is one of my... I'm going to be completely honest. Before this happened, I thought Hal Jordan was the biggest loser I've ever seen in comics. He's an old dude. He's got these
kind of a boring guy.
Gray sideburns. He was either a prick or he was just boring.
Yeah.
And I didn't care about either one of those.
So Ron Mars changed your heart.
Yes, Ron Mars definitely. But there's a whole thing about this that you guys might not know and you listeners might not know as well. So I'm about to hopefully open some eyes and some ears.
Okay.
But Emerald Twilight basically is the whole story of how Hal Jordan went fucking nuts, lost his shit, and pretty much killed every Green Lantern beside himself.
But you can understand why he lost his mind.
Yes. So what happened was, they did this, I don't know if you guys ever heard of this Death of Superman thing.
Of course we did. Matter of fact, came out in 1992 as well.
but they did this thing where Superman died, you know, and he was fighting this character called Doomsday, and it was a big event.
And
big
we
event.
Talked about, we talked about it on our death episode.
Didn't you buy like 8 prints of that back in the day? Didn't you do that, Jared?
I would always, if something was polybagged, I always bought more than one of it. Because one to read and one to save.
One to read, one to save. I didn't do that with that one, though. I actually had to buy one to save eventually. But I can only afford the second print to read
at the
time. Because when it first came out, all the shops were selling it immediately for
$20. That's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
The second print was going for $10.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit.
This was the black poly bag.
Right. And I usually could like puppy dog my dad and be like, man, I need that so bad. And he'd be like, all right. But when there was a second print available, all bets were off.
It's like, there's another print. But it's not that there's another print.
Well, in the 90s, they were going crazy with those prints, were they?
Right. And and this is the amazing thing. They sold the first and second print on the same day.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, same day. You could get the first print. And if you didn't want to buy the first print, you could buy the second print. It's not like they had one bagged and one unbagged. They had a first print and they had a second print.
That's crazy, yeah.
Which is really weird.
Because usually it's like sell out, make another.
Yeah, so, it could have been different in like bigger cities or something. But in my small town where I lived in bumfuck Ohio, it was first and second were available same day. So it was really kind of interesting how that happened. But anyway, this whole thing happened where Superman died. And then what happened was these new Supermen started to appear. You had Superboy, mm-hmm. which ended up being a clone of Superman and Lex Luthor.
Connor Kent.
Right, Connor Kent, who became his own man mm-hmm. eventually, which yeah. is great. I'm really glad they developed that character.
Eradicator.
Another one was the Eradicator, who was the purifier of Kryptonian and of the planet Krypton. And he tried to take over the mantle and actually almost pretty much believed he was Superman at the time. There was the Cyborg Superman, which is Hank Henshaw, who everyone kind of thought was Superman because he acted the most like Superman.
They thought like he died and came back like half human, half
right,
cyborg.
Yeah. And then there was Steel. Who was obviously, they even explained it was a guy that was injured during a construction thing and Superman saved him a long time ago. So he picked up the suit, he created it himself.
Like John Henry.
Right, John Henry.
Oh, completely modeled up. I think his name was John Henry.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes. And he came and took over the mantle to kind of fight in Superman's honor. So there was those characters. Well, what we find out eventually is the Cyborg Superman, the one we all thought was the savior and the real Superman, was not. He was actually Hank Henshaw, a really bad dude. He teamed up with a planetary extraterrestrial dictator named Mongol.
Who, Warworld.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He basically wanted to turn the planet Earth into Warworld.
Which is like his like epic gladiator matches, right?
Right. He wanted to do gladiator. He just wanted to fly around. He wanted to plant like engines and turbines.
And the poles of the Earth or something like that.
Right. Into Earth in order to like fly around space and destroying other planets and like capturing people and putting them in gladiatorial matches so they could fight each other.
It's good
really
to have
strange.
A vision. Yeah.
So he did that. Well, he didn't do that. But what he did with Cyborg Superman was completely eradicated Coast City, Hal Jordan's home city,
mm-hmm.
which is basically, I think, kind of like San Diego.
Or San Francisco, San Diego.
Yeah, one of those areas.
That's
here on the
thing,
West Coast.
Which, obviously, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know, but yeah, DC, Marvel was all like New York, real cities.
Yeah, real cities.
DC was like, each hero had their own kind of
Keystone city.
Amalgam city. Totally comic book
created.
Metropolis, Gotham.
Central City, Gotham, yeah, all these places. So he obliterated Coast City. Pretty much killing everyone Hal Jordan knew and loved. Almost everybody.
Why was it? Because I always remember that because I started reading The Emerald Twilight and I was like, why did he go crazy? I found out his city. Why did they, was it just random they targeted that city? Like,
I think it was kind of random, yeah. I mean, I don't remember anything that was specific to that city except for the
clever
the,
plot device, though.
The location.
Advanced the story.
Yeah,
because well, I just remember going like a Superman villain destroying Green Lantern City was super fucked, like, because it was just like, damn, dude.
Right. Like, yeah, there had to be some cross-thought here.
Right.
They had to say, okay, well, we're going to borrow a Cyborg, and we're going to have him work with Mongol, and,
right.
you know, and Superman's dudes. Yeah, it was like, okay, we're cool with that. But that's, like, issue 46 of this series. 40, and that's before Emerald Twilight, let me be clear. Mm-hmm. Issue 47 has a Green Lantern, Green Arrow team-up, which is just a completely different mission, and it really doesn't mention a whole lot about Coast City, but Green Lantern and Green Arrow kind of, you know, this is their last working together type situation where they're on the same side,
right.
In other words. Issue 48 is where the shit hits the fan.
Mm-hmm.
He gets to Coast City. He finds out, you know, he knows what's happened. He's clutching the remains of a doll. It's the only physical evidence of 7 million people who once lived there.
Wow.
They literally annihilated 7 million people.
Of your city that you're kind of sworn to protect.
Right.
Yeah, that'll do it.
They'll break a man's,
yeah.
So what he does, okay, he hasn't lost it quite yet. So he gets in a moment of pure anguish. He's very upset. So he uses his power ring to recreate Coast City.
Wow, okay, yeah, a lot of this is coming back.
This is
me.
The strength of his will. This is how strong Hal Jordan is. He uses it to recreate Coast City. And if they had shown these kind of things in the comic book prior, I might have been interested.
Right.
But it did not get to that point until Ron Mars took the helm. Of course, with the assistance of some great editors, which we'll get into here shortly.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't until then that I was like, wow, he has the power to recreate Coast City. So what happens was his ring's energy gets shut down.
Right.
And the city disappears. And one of the Guardians of the Universe contacts him via a holographic projection and tells him that he's in violation of a principal rule of one of the Green Lantern Corps' principal rule, rules. And it forbids lanterns from using their rings for personal gain.
Right. Right.
So Hal's enraged. He's like, everything I've done for you, everything I've ever done for the Guardians, and you can give me the power. I can rebring these everyone back to life.
Right, I can fix it, yeah.
And you refuse me?
Right.
You refuse me after everything I've done?
Right.
Do you know who I am? You know, he's like that guy.
Right.
So he
Do you know who my father is?
It's understandable. Actually, right. It's kind of like you worked at a company for like 30 years.
Right. Yeah. It built this up perfectly.
Yeah, yeah. This is a very good buildup.
So it's really well done in that manner. So basically what he decides to do is that he decides that they tell him that he can't use his ring anymore. So what he does is he siphons off the energy from the projection itself and uses that to recharge his ring and makes his way to the planet Oa. And what he intends to do...
It's the home of the battery.
And right, the guardians and everything. And what he intends to do is to bleed off all the energy from the main battery permanently to recreate Coast City.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so this gets crazy. So that's issue 48. Issue 49
Getting serious now.
Bloodbath, ladies and gentlemen. A bloodbath.
And the cover is beautiful.
It is the most beautiful cover I have seen in all of my life.
When a superhero goes bad.
It is drawn in such a way. And Daryl Banks, to his credit, is... Daryl, if you were here, I'd give you a big hug. Because this issue shows the immense craziness in Hal's face.
You see the emotion.
Yet shows such a historic piece. It's almost drawn Kirby-esque in a way.
Yeah,
the way it looks.
The Kirby bubbles and all that stuff.
Yeah. It's beautifully rendered. It's just a beautiful cover. It's drawing. If you saw this on the shelf, you'd be immediately drawn to it.
You grab it right away.
He's all in green with different parts lighter and darker around his eyes. And he's got rings all over his hands. And on some of his hands, on four of his fingers, he has two rings because he doesn't have any on his thumbs.
He went straight Liberace.
Right.
But the thing, now I'm thinking about this too, this was the first time, if I recall, that a hero became the villain. Like a hero, because I mean,
he snapped.
Yeah. Hal Jordan was like a staple hero of the Justice League, of the Green Lantern. Central.
Yeah.
For years. So that's pretty, this is a pretty bold thing to do, to be like, hey, we're going to make our hero snap and a murderer. You know?
Yeah. It was insane.
It was a shocker back then.
Yeah.
People lost their minds on this, by the way. Hal Jordan fans lost their minds.
Yep.
But so in this issue, it is a slaughter. Basically, I'm going to break this down. Jordan kills Ki-Han, which is this red dude with horns, this big, huge lantern, kills him, and the woman of Jay Delara, I believe is how you pronounce her name. I'm not quite sure. It's this purple lady with a green mask. Pretty cool. But what he does is he kind of beats the hell out of them and just takes their rings. And then what he goes on to do, he's starting to make his way to Oa. And Tomar Tu, who is a big ally of Hal Jordan, they've been friends for many, many years. He throws out a parasite from his home world, which is used to subdue and constrict Hal.
Right.
And he says it's unbreakable. Well, things that are unbreakable to most normal humans are not unbreakable to Hal Jordan. Right. So Hal Jordan uses his mere strength to cut and blast this parasite away. And what it does is it knocks Tomar Tu out completely. And like he comes to just as Hal's about ready to deliver the killing blow. But then a new lantern comes into play called Jack T. Chance.
Jack T. Chance.
And he's like the blue guy gardener, you know. He's hey, I'm Jack T. Chance. And he appears, and he punches Hal, and he goes to use a gun to blast him. And Hal, just like with the most villainous thing you could think of, says, "You're going to use a gun on me? A gun? You haven't been a Green Lantern very long, have you?"
Mm.
and he just blasts the shit out of him. And all you see him is like floating in space with blood dripping from his lip and his dice and bullets.
Jesus.
And he then goes and he takes his ring from Tomar II and from Jack. And from there, he takes Creon of Tebas, who was a brilliant tactician, kills him, takes his ring. Hanu, this rock lord kind of guy, kills him, takes his ring. Graf Torn, kills him, this little orange dude with a French mustache. That's the only way I can explain it. And so he kills these three other dudes, and then he gets to Boudica. And I think I'm pronouncing it right. I apologize if I'm butchering it. But Boudica...
Oh, Boudica, yeah.
Boudica,
yeah.
Boudica, is one of Hal's close friends. They fought many battles together, and she's fighting like hell. She's a tough mother. And she tells him that, I'm a warrior. This ring is my weapon. I've earned it. It's as much a part of me as my hand. You're never going to get it, Hal Jordan. And he says, yeah, I kind of thought so. And he cuts off her hand.
Yeah, it's pretty brutal.
He cuts off her hand, takes the ring off, and tosses her hand.
Jesus.
And just leaves her floating in space to die as well. So that's the basics. Then he lands on Oa, and he's ready to get that power battery. He wants that power.
And he's got like a fistful of rings right now.
Fistful of rings. And who's there to stand and oppose him?
Good old Kilowog.
None other than Kilowog. And Kilowog and him get into the biggest battle ever. It lasts like five or around maybe two or three pages.
Because Kilowog is the guy who trained Green Lantern.
He did. Right? Yeah, he trained Green Lantern.
Kill Sergeant.
Yeah.
So through mere will, Hal knocks down Kilowog and knocks him unconscious. Doesn't kill him.
Right.
This is the first one he just knocks unconscious.
Right.
And he takes his ring.
Okay.
Or actually, no, I don't even think he does take his ring at this point. I think he just walks away, or maybe he does take his ring. They don't really show it, to be honest. But then the last couple pages, the Guardians are realizing, oh my God, we're in trouble. So Hal shows up. He's like, I want that battery. And they go, well, you've just left us no other alternative. And out of the main power battery steps none other than Sinestro.
Sinestro.
And Sinestro is like, I'm ready for this. And Hal's like, no.
Not only that, Sinestro's got a Green Lantern ring instead of his yellow, the Ring of Kord, right?
Yep, yes. He's got a green ring, and he's ready to do battle. So
now we get to
that is part two. So part three of Emerald Twilight is the main bout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this corner, Hal Jordan with 15 goddamn rings.
And this is Green Lantern 50, which is a very awesome 90s cover. I think it was right. Glow in the Dark, too.
Glow in the Dark, yep.
Everything 90s, gimmick. Fucking loved it.
And, yep. And a pivotal issue because an introduction of a certain character, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, this issue is almost completely Hal versus Sinestro, as it should be.
Yeah. As That's how you write a battle. Like,
right. Make it hasn't been issue, forever. Right. So they're fighting. They're blasting each other. You know, Hal's like, I don't need all these crutches. He throws all the rings off and just leaves his one.
Bring the pain.
And he's like, let's go, Sinestro. Because Sinestro basically just says, oh, I see why you're going to win. You have all these rings, you know. And he's like,
twisting
I don't need this shit. Yeah. So they start fighting. And they fight. And they fight. One knocks the other down. One knocks the other down. Again and again and again. Guns blazing, everything. And then they both use a powerful blast that's so strong and knocks each of them down. It awakens back up with Sinestro coming up onto Hal Jordan, getting him in a headlock. Hal counters,
it's
punches him in the face.
Now. It's just fucking
yeah,
brawl.
They're just punching
ugly
each other.
Fight.
Yeah. Bloody lips and
Doomsday
faces,
Superman-ish.
Swollen eyes. Yeah. And they're knocking each other down. And Hal's finally got Sinestro on the ropes. And he says, and Sinestro says, we're finished, all right. Both of us finished. And Hal says, what are you talking about? I finally beat you. I won. And then Sinestro says, did you, Jordan? Look at yourself and answer me. And Hal says, I should have done this a long time ago. Damn you. And then Sinestro says, you know, you probably should have. Crack. Hal Jordan breaks Sinestro's neck. He gets him in a headlock from behind and literally breaks his fucking neck.
In the MMA world, we call it a rear naked choke, but he straight up snaps his neck.
And then Hal walks away and goes right up to the power battery. And he says, power. It's mine for the taking. Mine. So I can get I can make everything right again. And this giant hand touches him on the back and says no. And who is it? But none other than Kilowog. Back at it. And they don't show him in this with his ring. So it looks like Kilowog's just going to use his brute strength to try and take Hal down.
Mm-hmm.
So they're fighting and
Brave,
fighting and fighting.
Which is working.
Yeah, Kilowog's taking him to the ropes,
gut
basically.
Punch. And then...
But what happens is Hal has to cheat. So Kilowog goes to punch him. Hal stops it with his ring power, by the way, and then uses his ring to completely incinerate Kilowog, leaving just his charred bone skeletal remains.
Ribs, everything are seen. Like, he's just done.
So as we can see, these... This isn't for the kiddies.
No, no. He take this is not. He
and at the time, it was like so for keeps too. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously, like it's comic books.
Right. Everybody no one knew. Yeah. Right. No one knew. So when I saw this, and this is some of the best storytelling to me, is a man on the ropes with mm-hmm. nothing to lose, mm-hmm.
and that's the most dangerous man, by the way.
Or, in this case, a crazy ass man mm-hmm. on the run with nothing to lose, mm-hmm. which is
one
even
of the most
scarier.
Powerful weapons in
yeah.
the galaxy.
It's
a
dangerous person.
So the Guardians try to convince him. Hal Jordan throws his ring down. I don't deserve it. He goes to starts to cry. And then he's like, I can't. I have to do this. He flies into the power battery, the source of all the Green Lantern's power. And basically, as he's gaining the power, the Guardians are saying, Ganthet, who's one of the little blue Guardians, they're like, you're our only hope. We're going to send you somewhere. We have to save you. And then we need you to go save the Green Lanterns. You have to help us. You have to help humanity.
Emergency plan.
So as the power battery destroys and they all use their shielding to save Ganthet, basically Hal Jordan appears, but he doesn't appear as Hal Jordan any longer. He appears as another character, Parallax.
Parallax.
Right.
So basically then he's got this armor on him and this really cool suit and stuff.
And he just is the green energy.
Right. And he flies off. He's going to go back home. So then Ganthet comes out of this pile of skeletal remains of Guardians. He finds one ring in the dirt and basically, or like a little piece of the power battery, and uses it to create a ring.
One last ring. Yeah.
And he uses that to create the ring. And then he flies back to Earth and he lets the ring lead him to one person that's deserving. And that person is? None other than Kyle Rayner.
There we go.
Our new Green Lantern, who appears on the last page, and he says, oh man, I think my life just got a lot more complicated. And indeed it did, because it led to so many things.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a caveat to this story. Originally, this story wasn't meant to happen.
Really?
I don't know if you guys know this. But originally, Emerald Twilight was supposed to be scripted by the regular writer of Green Lantern, Gerard Jones. And that was according to a previews volume 3 in 1993. What was supposed to happen was it was supposed to involve two sets of extraterrestrial altruists known as the Guardians. So two sets of Guardians, another whole set of Guardians appear, and they say, we're the Guardians. Which just might be where Geoff Johns got his idea.
Right, right.
When he wrote, you know, these other Guardians that appeared at some point.
Right.
That these Guardians, and they were saying they were the real Guardians, and the other Guardians were like, no, we're the real Guardians. And Hal Jordan was kind of stuck in the middle, and he had to decide which one was the real one. And then this huge battle took place between the Guardians, and then all the superheroes had to come in and help and stuff. That was the original idea. But DC editorial did not think this was interesting enough to draw new readers in.
Right.
And by all means, after reading about that, I agree.
Makes sense.
Yeah, that sounds so boring compared to what
this
we
one,
just read.
This one has more emotional resonance because, as we talked about earlier, when you have a hero like Hal Jordan, who's been, you know, such a quintessential hero, to him to snap and just
mm-hmm.
basically go
mm-hmm.
rogue and just commit acts of evil.
Acts of total evil, yes. Mm-hmm. So my hat's off to Paul Levitz, Dennis O'Neill, Archie Goodwin, Mike Carlin, and the Green Lantern editor at the time was Kevin Dooley. My hat's off to you guys for plotting. They actually sat down and they plotted Emerald Twilight. They set up the whole idea. And then they said, well, who can we get to write it? And then they hired Ron Mars.
Oh, that's awesome.
So this wasn't Ron Mars technically his baby, but this is what defined him.
Now, why did
because
he
wrote it like a crazy son of a bitch. Ron Mars, I love you for this. Yeah. This is one of the best 90s comics I've ever read. And in fact, I still read Green Lantern
Top
to 10. This day.
Top 10 for sure.
Because of it.
Yeah.
Now, how come Gerard wasn't allowed to write the story? What was going on there?
Well, I don't know behind the scenes what happened. I would assume that Gerard was like, well, that's bullshit. You know, this
probably
is
also not in line of like what I was already establishing.
Right. Like so
he might have walked away.
Yeah, because he never came. I don't believe he ever came back to Green Lantern after that.
What a nice story to be given, though. Like as a writer, I can say for sure that would be like, way to really, I can teeth. Have that? Thanks.
You know, and to piggyback on what you said, Ron Mars in many ways set up Jeff Johns' run later on in the 2000s.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's no doubt that...
I mean, we definitely knew that Ron was a little on his way out in the later run of Green Lantern. I mean, because he wrote the book for, what, almost 100 issues,
right.
If not?
Right.
I mean, he wrote the book for forever.
Right. The early 2000s, I believe.
Yeah, so, I mean, anybody runs out of story. Right. You know, ask Dan Jurgens. Anybody runs out of story when it comes to, you know, that many issues.
Even Chris Claremont.
Yeah. So... You know, my hat's off to him, too, for writing it for as long as he did and still making it relevant. And I stuck with him to the bitter end, by the way.
Right. Well, we come to me.
To you, sir.
To my one of my favorite 90s tales. And it's so funny because all the things we chose were such, like
iconic.
I said.
Iconic. They're iconic.
Iconic. And I will say it. The 90s was all about gimmicks. Polybagging was a big thing. Holograms were a big thing.
Absolutely.
Whatever you could make your issue pop or whatever was a big thing. And my story is the Fatal Attraction story that ran through all the X titles, all the mutant titles.
1993.
It was essentially it was a bunch of stories that were kind of culminating in all the mutant books. Pretty much what it all revolved around was the return of Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
Magneto was allegedly killed by Fabian Cortez in what we learned was part of this battle, this group called the Upstarts.
That's an Asteroid M, if I recall.
Yeah, who are these group of like kind of rich mutants trying to kill. They're kind of like second generation Hellfire Club. They're trying to, they had a contest of who could kill the most important mutants and get the most points. And
Jesus.
Oh, it was a great story. I'll do that one for another time. The Upstarts were great, and I wish they would have used them more and kept it going. But Fabian Cortez was part of one of my favorite teams, because I always like the darker versions of characters. They created this dark version of the X-Men called the Acolytes.
That's right.
So instead of everybody being like sycophants to Professor X, like the X-Men, they were sycophants to Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
And they're first introduced with Fabian Cortez and a couple others. There was Chrome and Delgado and some other ones. And they were... these mutants that were like, we want to bow to you, Magneto. We want to do what you say. We think what your vision is right. And he was like, sure, come on in. Little did Magneto know that, and the other acolytes didn't know, that Fabian Cortez was part of this Upstarts group, and he arranged it so pretty much Magneto gets killed. Cortez takes over the acolytes, and this story kind of the impetus of it started in X-Men 300, which was this awesome John Romita Jr. hologram cover.
Oh, yeah.
With the X-Men going to, I think, Scotland, and because Moira McTaggart was kidnapped by the Acolytes.
McTaggart.
Yeah, because they think that she... Because Cortez is stringing all the Acolytes along, saying, like, they killed the flat scans, which is what they called humans. Killed our savior, even though he did it. And... Fatal Attraction starts in one of my favorite... Honestly, it's one of my favorite single issues, period. It's X-Factor 92. And this was my favorite team of X-Factor. It was...
That was an awesome team.
Peter David writing it. Mike... I think Mignola was doing the art for a little bit. It was Havoc, Wolfsbane,
Polaris,
Multiple Man, Strong Guy.
Oh, yeah.
Quicksilver. Mm-hmm. It's such a cool team.
Awesome team.
And in this story, it starts right out with Fabian Cortez, so messed up, sending the Acolytes, this group of like dark X-Men, dark mutants, to a hospital, a fucking hospital, to just slaughter humans because they're the weakest, right? Not only are they humans, but they're sick.
Yeah.
So they literally just go there and start murdering them. There's these twins called the Kleinstock brothers. They have this like kind of energy shooting power, but they also could merge together. There's this guy named Senyaka who had this electric whip, and he could like siphon off energy. He wraps it around like they literally go to an IV thing and like charge it up and just blow it up while the person's like dying. Senyaka takes a nurse and just like wraps his like energy tentacle around it. This guy, what was his name? Spore. He's kind of like this, like, wolf-like character. Just puts his arm through a nurse. It's just some of the, like, most brutal violence. And that's how the issue opens up. And it goes into Fabian Cortez, like, you find out that Fabian Cortez planned this whole thing. Also, by this point, Magneto has not returned. He's been threatening to return, but I think we saw, like, him rise up from, in like a back issue, like rise up, like we knew he was back. So Fabian Cortez has no idea what's going on.
A character came back from the dead?
I know, isn't that weird?
Unheard of.
I think they actually kept him dead for a second. This issue also introduces a character that's still around today, Exodus.
Oh, yes.
Exodus, I always think, is a character who never got enough.
Paris DuBennett, if I remember.
Paris DuBennett, Black Knight.
Black Knight.
Their origins are intertwined.
Yep, from the Crusades.
Yeah, and actually we find out Apocalypse gave him his power later on. Exodus is this immortal, super psionic, Omega-level psionic mutant, can rival that of Professor X. They and what we find out, what weird, like, way later is that Magneto awoke him.
Right.
And he's, like, indebted to Magneto. So he's Magneto's second in command, and he's an Omega-level mutant. So he comes, and he just shows himself to the X-Factor, and they're like, hey, buddy, and he's like, yeah, see you later, and just, like, disappears, and they're like, what the fuck was that? And they're on their way to go fight the Acolytes. They're gonna go find them. Mm-hmm. So they find out, X-Factor, they're the government team. They find out where the Acolytes are, and they have this awesome battle, and they have Random, I don't know, if another 90s character.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who could, like, morph into guns and stuff like that.
His hands morphed into guns.
Right. So we have this epic battle between the Acolytes and X-Factor, and X-Factor pretty much holding their own. And there's one of my favorite parts is there was this one Acolyte named Seamus Mellencamp. You don't get any more, like, Scottish than that. And he's this just giant lizard guy. And he starts attacking Madrox, the Multiple Man. And now Madrox was always the kind of jokey, snarky guy, just having a good time. He was never takes anything serious. And he's getting ripped. His clones, his dupes, are getting ripped apart by this guy. And, like, you know, he's feeling that. And he's going, oh, my God. And Seamus finally finds the quintessential Madrox, starts gouging his eyes out.
Oh, boy.
And Madrox, in just a survival mode, it's one of the coolest death scenes ever, shoves his hand into Seamus Mellencamp's mouth and makes a dupe inside him and rips him apart.
Oh, my God.
And he's like, and he's in shock. Like, he's just like, I can't believe I did it.
Whoa.
But it's fucking awesome. That's made me sick. Just become a Madrox fan. Like, I mean, I always liked him.
Never knew that.
See, folks, back in the 90s, they brought the pain.
They brought the pain.
Yes, they did.
And then we find out that this whole thing was orchestrated so Fabian Cortez could get Quicksilver, who was part of X-Factor, to join them because he's the sire he's the son of Magneto. Quicksilver's like, fuck you, and he leaves. The next part of the story goes into X-Force 25, where the team goes against Exodus. It's a pretty standard battle. This is when X-Force was being led by Cable, and Cable was like, we're an army, and it's got members of the New Mutants, got, you know, Sunspot. Yeah,
it's like a mutant Navy
SEAL. Who wrote that one? It sounds pretty boring.
Oh, I think it was Fabian Nicieza.
Fabian.
Your favorite guy.
Damn you, Fabian.
So Exodus comes in, and he introduces himself properly by beating the shit out of the whole team. And his psionic powers are completely...
They're no joke.
No joke. Then we see a man return in robes. Eric Venture. Mm-hmm. Magnus. Magneto. First he comes and he... This is one way they started showing Magneto with all the powers we were talking about in a previous Superhero Smackdown.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He can affect the iron in people's blood. Rusty and Skids, who were two members of X-Terminators, and then they became members of the New Mutants, they were brainwashed by the MLF, the Mutant Liberation Front, Stripe's people.
Led by Stripe, yeah.
Yeah. He just touches their heads and fixes the blood in them and fixes all the brainwashing, and they immediately are like, you're our savior. They join him. So he's got Rusty Skids, he's got Exodus, and he's just like, why don't you guys join me? Because if you think about it, X-Force at that time was kind of up Magneto's alley. They were like, protect mutants at all costs. You know, attack first. The closed fist, then the open hand. Mm-hmm. So Magneto's like, join me, I'm back. And Cable is like, we're not joining you, we're not doing this at all. They fight with Exodus, they pretty much just escape Asteroid M. They're on Asteroid M, by the way. Like, Magneto officially reappears in his costume for the first time since his death.
Looks like a badass,
yeah, too. And a badass. And Cable's like, you're not taking my kids. I'm going to fight you. Magneto.
What is this?
Yeah.
Paternity thing, yeah, or something?
Magneto. I don't know if you know, but Cable is kind of like a half cyborg. He's got a lot of metal parts.
It's an organic virus. That's, yeah, right.
So Magneto can kind of exploit those things, and he just completely rips, wow, literally rips half of Cable's body off.
My God.
Look at that. He's just like bleeding out like oil and blood. So, and he's just a mess.
And by the way, that foreshadows something else that's going to happen.
Exactly. I forget. In fact, yeah, reading this, I forget all the stuff that happens. Cable just survives by body sliding, which was his way of teleporting out of there. He gets out of there. He's done. He leaves. Then this leads us to a very big issue, X-Men 304. This was, remember the legacy virus was going around, mm-hmm, and the first person it took.
Giving everybody cotton candy?
Yeah, it was giving everybody cotton candy.
Right. First person kills Colossus, yeah, is sister.
Ileana Rasputin, a.k.a. Magic.
Yep.
So I think it starts out with them. Oh, no, it opens with all the Acolytes beating the shit out of Fabian Cortez because Magneto has come back and been like, I'm back. Oh, by the way, that guy's a traitor. That guy who's leading you, he's a piece of shit. So they're going to fucking murder him.
Oh, yeah. Exodus, I think, is the one who officially does the deed.
Exodus is the one who, yeah, he's just sitting there, like, adjusting his sleeves. He's like, look, you guys don't know what's been going on. Magneto's back. This guy's a fucking liar, and he's a guy that killed him. Exodus blasts his ass. Pretty much, I think at this time, you thought he was dead. Then we cut to Magneto and Asteroid M. He's remembering.
Actually, I think it's Avalon.
Avalon. You're right. He called it Avalon. That's right. Because, yeah, he was going to be the savior. So then it's just a bunch of, we see Colossus kind of being super,
yawn,
super depressed, boring, boring, boring. There's some boring stuff. Then we cut to the funeral for Ileana.
Aww.
Interrupted by Magneto. Magneto now in his full glory is like, I'm back.
Did he come with flowers? Or?
No. No flowers. And
flowers of mutant brotherhood.
He did bring some guests, uninvited guests. He brought the Acolytes Exodus.
Nice.
Not the best thing. Starts off by Wolverine. The thing about Wolverine and Magneto, which is so great, is Wolverine's such a badass. But with Magneto, it's like never an issue. He's just like, yeah, Wolverine, why don't you go sit in the corner over there? You're all metal, buddy. Go sit in the corner, which is what he does. Then, what Donald's laughing at is Wolverine comes up, he tosses Wolverine aside, and then he busts up Professor Xavier's wheelchair. Professor X is like, oh my God! Busts it up. Then this is what's great. Everybody's like, all the Acolytes are like, he goes, Sanyaka, I want to talk to you. Sanyaka was that guy I was telling you about earlier with the psionic whip that he was killing a nurse with in the beginning. He's like, Sanyaka, you've served me well. Like, you really did embody everything you did. Like, but you embodied everything I'm preaching, like, protect the mutants, fuck the humans. But you did it without me telling you to do it. So I'm going to have to kill you. So he wraps him up in his own coils and kills him.
What?
Although, spoiler, Sanyaka comes back. Even a guy named Sanyaka doesn't die in Marvel. So he kills him. Then he goes on preaching, like, X-Men, you should join me. And while he's giving his speech, they're all secretly powering up Bishop. Because Bishop, if you don't know, can absorb energy and then redirect it.
Mm-hmm.
So Storm's charging him up. Jubilee, they're all just charging him up. And all of a sudden, they're like, Bishop, do your thing. And he goes up to Magneto and starts just blasting all that energy at him. And look, they're like, everybody's just giving him like a group hug and just giving Bishop all this energy. He's going toe-to-toe. Rogue tries to steal his power, and he's like, yeah, I've got actually too much power for you to steal. Takes her out. Tosses her.
Into Gambit.
Yeah. Tosses her into Gambit. Takes, like, the metal from the fence of the mansion. Starts just tossing that at people. Bishop's like, oh, yeah? Starts blasting him. Sunspot's blasting him. Gambit's blasting him. Iceman's blasting him.
Everyone's bringing it.
And this is what I forgot about this story. A huge betrayal. So as this is all going on, remember, this is the funeral for Ileana Rasputin. So right. Her brother is Peter Rasputin, Colossus. Colossus doesn't really have much to believe in the dream anymore, of Professor X's dream, when his little sister is fucking dead. So he's just like, Bishop, crap, back, nails Bishop right in the spine, knocks him down, lifts up Magneto, and is like, I think you're right. I'm going to go with you.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yep.
Charles Xavier's like, what the fuck are you doing? Don't leave. He's sitting
there.
Give
me my wheelchair back.
Give me my wheelchair back. Magneto's like, dude, I'm sorry. It's over. See you later. They're like up, flying, drops him. Archangel catches him. Colossus left. It's like the ultimate betrayal, the ultimate fucked up thing.
You know what it kind of reminds you of? You remember like back in the old day we used to watch wrestling? It would always be like a surprise when some major, you know, good guy character would
turn
Hollywood Hulk.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my goodness, you know.
So let me just mention this, since we did talk about a superhero smackdown with Magneto before. Mm-hmm. We've just seen Magneto take on and pretty much defeat the entire X-Men.
The X-Men, X-Force, and X-Factor.
Yeah. So Superman.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Now, the story, there's three more parts, but the story, because they literally had to, like, we want to cross it over into all the issues.
Excalibur, we got to throw them in there.
So, the Excalibur one, I'm not even going to really talk about because it was such a shoehorned in thing. The Wolverine one was the aftermath of the issue I'm about to talk about.
Right. X-Men 25, I recall.
Captain Britain's in it, but I don't even know if he's in that issue. Or if he is, he's just like, hey,
I'm here. He's there, he's just there.
I'm here for a little bit. But in X-Men 25.
Oh, yeah. Another famous issue.
Is the Vengeance. Okay, so now Professor X is like, all right. And the government, too, is like, we can't have this dude, this crazy guy in the White House. I'm sorry. This crazy guy in Avalon.
Please do something about it.
We have to do something about it. Professor X is like, let us take care of it. And also, fuck Magneto. He just took Colossus from me and beat the shit out of me. And he fucked up my wheelchair. Piece of shit. So Professor X... is like, and first off, Magneto, just to show his power, I think, like, sends an EMP wave throughout. And there's your Captain Britain just having his tea with Nightcrawler. See that? I think he sends an EMP wave, like, throughout the world. This is another thing showing his power, just being like, I could just knock out all the power.
I don't think we mentioned that, did we?
He
could, like, basically, kill everything for, like, knowledge and stuff. They want to, let's look up his powers on the internet. No.
Nope.
And then Professor X,
special suit.
That's right. A salty Charles Xavier gets a special suit that allows him to walk with the use of, obviously, his mental powers as well. And he's like, I'm getting a strike team together to go fuck up Magneto. Like, we're taking, we're taking Magneto out.
He destroyed my wheelchair.
Yeah.
And they're Grandpa Xavier's angry.
And they're like, Professor, like, what are you doing? And he takes Gambit, Rogue, Wolverine, and Jean Grey with him. They go to Avalon. Colossus is now an official acolyte. I think he senses... Oh, that's the one thing where Colossus was still kind of loyal. He sees that some people have teleported on to Avalon, and the acolytes are like, what was that? And he's like, oh, it was nothing, in his Russian accent. And so he knows they're there. He's just going to let it play out. So they do some... Oh, I think they did some... Oh, and Quicksilver comes too, because you got to have the sun. They pretty much do a thing where they send all the acolytes into escape pods and get them out of there so they can just have Magneto. It's all rigged. Even Exodus.
Who sends the people out in escape pads?
Professor X and the X-Men rig it so there's like some teleportation device in there that allows the acolytes
to hack in.
Oh, they just start disappearing.
So he's pretty much like teleporting them all out of there. And you see Exodus going like, no, master! Like, he just gets sent out into an escape pod. So now Magneto's like, all right, let's do it. So now the battle's starting.
Two major things happen in this battle.
Yeah. Rogue immediately gets wrapped up. They decide, obviously, they're going to attack his mind. So, because that's one of the only ways to do it. So Jean Grey...
Do they high five?
Jean Grey and Professor X do some random high five because they're going to go work on... But while they're trying to attack his mind, which is not easy because his helmet, he's got some kind of resistance to it. The other X-Men got to soften him up. Gambit sends a card straight to his face, which is pretty brutal. And Magneto gets pissed off and just tells him to shut up by throwing a piece of metal at his face, slicing his face. Rogue takes a punch. Quicksilver takes a punch. They are immediately bitch slapped down by Magneto.
Get his helmet knocked off.
Yeah. Then Wolverine, when will you ever learn? Why did you even bring Wolverine with you, Charles?
Right.
Wolverine, and this is where you could tell they were like, we can't show the blood, even though they could show blood. Wolverine slashes Magneto, like, really bad, and he's got not one scratch on. Like, his clothing got scratched.
Well, that's because he can use the iron in his body to coagulate his blood and stop it from dripping.
So Magneto is pretty much like...
I don't know if that's true, but...
Well, no, because he looks like he's pretty hurt. He's like, you gutted me, you piece of shit. He's like, all right, Logan, I'm done with this. Like, literally, we've been doing this for years. I've been playing with kids' gloves. It's done. And this is the issue... where he rips out all the adamantium out of Wolverine.
It just looks like he liquefies it.
Yeah.
And rips it out of his body.
And just rips it out of his
body. It's all coming out in like little snake-like slithers out of his skin.
Right.
It's really cool.
And the Wolverine issue after this deals with him.
The after effects.
The after effects. He's going to go solo because, you know, he's a loner. And then we also find out he's got bone claws. So his claws were always there.
Old bone claws. Yeah,
they're always there, but the adamantium coated them. So that's also the last straw for Professor X. Professor X.
He snaps.
Snaps and is like, that's it. You can't fuck with my X-Men anymore. And mind wipes Magneto. Kind of the same thing that Magneto just did to Wolverine. Like, I'm done with you. Like, we're done. We're not doing this anymore. Professor X is like, we're not doing this anymore. Like, you're my friend, but you've gone too far. Completely mind wipes him. And that was a story. And
turned to catatonic. He's almost like a
vegetable. He's a vegetable. He's a
vegetable.
Yeah. And that was a story they actually kept for a long time, where Magneto was like,
this event led to something else in the future.
Was Onslaught?
Yep, the creation of Onslaught. This is why Onslaught.
That's right. That'll be for another 90s day or 2000s, whatever that was. So they leave him at the end, a vegetable with Colossus to take care of him. And there's just this epic, almost like Frankenstein monster, Colossus holding this vegetable Magneto just in this destroyed Avalon. And it's just a great, but it was it was one of those stories that was just fun all the way through.
Yeah,
like, and
two,
it was
two epic things happened.
Yeah,
I mean, besides that issue by Fabian, it all looked really good.
Yeah, totally, totally. So yeah, like I said, there's a Wolverine and there's an Excalibur, but they're so just like, well, they're mutants and we got to give them a story too. But the story was literally done. Like, right. The Wolverine one's good because it's like the aftermath. The Excalibur one was fun, but there was just nothing
really going.
No point. So yeah, Fatal Attractions was my story.
Yeah, I remember for Christmas one year, my parents gave me, it was a big plaque, and it had all of those holograms just as cards in the plaque.
Oh,
not
cool.
The books, but just the cards, all of the hologram cards, and it was like limited edition and stuff. Don't know what happened to it. Somewhere back home.
In the attic.
Yeah, somewhere. But much like that plaque that I had, I think we're going to have to put this episode in the attic.
Yeah.
And
it's done. It's over.
It was fun, fellas.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you all for listening. Please check out our video broadcasts that we have on YouTube, which you can see our pretty faces.
Subscribe, rate, review, all that stuff.
Support your local comic book shop.
Tell your friends.
Yep. Tell people you don't like either.
I'm Jared.
I'm Kevin.
And I'm Donald.
And we'll see you
at the comic shop.